I started out with vipassana, insight meditation,
just
mindfulness.
What we did last.
Rising and falling of the abdomen is one technique, watching the breath out and in, out and in. I got super critical. I saw too much, and I didn't like what I saw. I had this sort of clarity without the kindness. And I was starting to drive myself nuts. Because I saw every little thing that was wrong and nothing that was good. And I said, I got to change my meditation. I want to do samatha meditation, tranquility meditation, bliss meditation, kindness meditation. I want to feel good. I want to walk on the streets of LA and feel good and not critical. So I started watching my breath, and I started to understand that the sensation of breath was happening in the present moment. The great thing about having breath as your object of meditation is you always have it with you. And if you don't, you don't need to meditate. So I started going out and in, watching the breath. I was like a little sentry, you know, right at the nostril. And I could feel it coming in and out, coming out. And then I learned, recognized, came to understand that every sensation we have is always happening right now. Pain and pleasure. Ever pinch yourself to see if it's real? That's what they're talking about. Because the pinch is real. It's happening right now. You can feel it. But some of the mindsets and thought patterns that we have seem to drift in the past and future, and you don't know if it's happening right now. So I continued to do my breath meditation. And then I wanted to go even deeper into my breath, and I started to let go of the counting, stay with sensation, and I came to understand that internally there's a representation of breath, according to the Visuddhimagga, Path of Purification, 5th century text on meditation. 900 pages, really boring. But they talked about, you can see the representation of your breath internally, and sometimes it looks like fireflies, sometimes it looks like balls of cotton, sometimes it looks like lava flows in different colors. And I thought to myself, how am I going to see that inside? I didn't know how to do it. And then I figured it out. Have you ever looked into a camera with a flash, and the flash goes off, and you can see the flash for a few moments after it's gone? It's sort of represented in your head. So I said, okay, that's the representation. So I'm going to try squinting my eyes really tight and then letting relax. And every time I did that, I saw these little spots of light, points of light, a million points of light. So I said, okay, that's how I can practice looking inside and not outside, by making those little light points happen by squeezing my eyelids. So I'd squeeze, I'd relax, squeeze, relax. I'd hold on to those points of lights as long as I could until they finally went away. But in doing that, I was able to see other stuff inside there too, inside my consciousness. You could literally see it. And I saw colors and I saw movement, and I'm going, whoa. And what happens when you start to see that kind of stuff? Your body gets completely relaxed. You can't hear anything. You can't smell anything. You can't taste anything. All your sense doors close down, and it becomes a completely internal experience. And then the gong rings, ring. And then your eyes open and your ears open, and all those little internal images go away, and you go, whoa. But what was happening afterwards was just a very relaxed and accepting personality that had materialized because of that kind of meditation. It took a lot of energy. It took some breathing patterns that I had to impose on myself and use my diaphragm and not use my lungs and not breathe through the mouth, but breathe through the nose only. And I got really tired after doing it for a couple of years. See, meditation is really slow. Years, we're talking about. So I said, well, what kind of meditation can I do that would really be better than that? Be better than all those internal sensations and all those points of light and the bliss and the rapture that happens through your body. What other kind of meditation can I do? And there's something called shikantaza, just sitting, Japanese Zen. I said, that's what I want to do. I just want to sit. Just want to sit. So now, in my meditation practice, I don't watch my breath. I don't try to go inside and see all these images. And I don't try to do anything other than just sit and not be attached. And what that means is this. that oftentimes in my neighborhood we have helicopters flying over our meditation center. And when I hear that sound, which is simply my eardrum vibrating, a picture comes in my head. Remember how in kindergarten I look at the lines and see the pictures? Now the sound can create those pictures. Is the picture real? Or is it just happening because the eardrum is vibrating and that's the response? What happens if I can just let my eardrum vibrate and not have any picture happen? Okay. What happens if I can be a pane of glass, transparent, and all the stuff that's in my immediate environment simply goes through me, and I don't attach to any of it and don't push away any of it? So now you got a sensation in the knee called pain. But is there really something called pain? Or is that what we call a really strong sensation? Is that the label that we give it? Could we simply sit with that sensation and have it be a sensation and not identify with it? It doesn't have to be us. It can just be happening because we're sitting. And all those thoughts we have, do those have to be us? Or can they just simply be thoughts? Now, this gets into some really interesting territory, because then you start to say, well, who am I really? And the Buddhists would say, well, you're mind and body. You're the five aggregates. You're a lot of other things, but nothing that you think you are. That this thing that arises in your head, this personality, this thought process, it is there because you have a human birth and a mind and a body. And you take it to be your master. You listen to the little words and the incentives that it gives you. And then you say, but it's just thinking. And then you come to the conclusion that all that thinking, that person who you are, is a really good tool to get through this very complicated life, but it's not your master any longer. You have separated from that as being your master. So now you're sitting on the floor, and you have sensations, and your sense doors are open, and nothing materializes in your consciousness to represent those sensations. And can you take that with you into the world and not attach to anything or not have aversion to anything? Can you have the mind of equanimity, of balance? And if you can figure out how to sit like that, just sitting, and then take it with you into the world, you don't need to have the world be anything other than what it is. But this takes like a really long time. So for 20 years I've been doing this and doing that, and now I just sit. People say, well, what kind of meditation? I just sit. And they're so disappointed. They would like it to be much better than that.
Like, how often do you do this?
That's a good question. Not as much as I used to. I used to have much more time in training. Now, I've got the website, and the Facebook page, and the cats to feed, and the laundry to do, and presentations to give. So I probably 3 or 4 times a week, you know? And it's nice to go back and just sit. But now, when you've committed yourself to this lifestyle, there always seems to be something to do. Isn't you never? Yes.
You know, I have a very, like, I think it's a very stereotype comment about, like, monks and such. I thought like monks were the ones that, like, would go in the mountains and go, like, away from society, no technology, no nothing, and just be.
Yes.
But when you were talking about, like, oh, having my website
and Facebook,
I was like, wow, Facebook. I was like, wow, social media and really connecting with technology. I didn't know that. Like, I just.
Yes, there are monks that don't come down from the mountain. They will not be talking to you in this class. They don't accept invitations. And then you have the urban monks like myself. Have you ever been to a Catholic city parish? And have you ever been to a Catholic monastery? Those are the two different forms that this practice or that practice materializes in. So I'm the urban guy living in a city parish, Koreatown, and we don't have a lot of quiet or bird sounds to really make you think life is wonderful. You know, we've got
so the helicopters.
We got the helicopters, yes, the urban birds, and you look at that and you go, okay, well, if I can practice here, if I can get something done here, then going to the forest should be a piece of cake. But of course it isn't, because no matter where you go, you go with you. You know, so all the baggage, all the stuff travels with you into the forest and travels with you to the city. So there are the monks that are online, and I have people praising my podcasts. They say, I'm so glad that you have podcasts, because there's nobody in my community that I can study with or listen to the Dharma or have questions that I could email to. So I'm so glad you're online. So in a way, it's appropriate for monastics to reach out in an electronic way to make the world a little better.